Do you mind? We're playing through. Here's Froggy, Brian Golf, and Wacker.
Actually, it's just Froggy and Brian Golf today. Brian Wacker is out playing golf somewhere, so he couldn't make it. So it's just us, but we have...
He's been playing a lot of golf lately.
He really has been. He was playing with Adam Scott the other day. Yeah. Now he's playing again. I don't know what he's doing.
Whatever.
We have an amazing guest today. Somebody that I really admire a lot in the golf industry. Really super duper nice guy. Swing coach extraordinaire, Golf Channel guy. We're talking to Sean Foley. Good morning, Sean. How are you?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We had Brando Chamblee on the pod not too long ago. And, you know, when I was watching after the match play, all of a sudden I'm like, wait a second. It's Sean Foley and Brando Chamblee together.
We've had them both on.
And we're getting ready to have Sean Foley on the pod. So that was perfect. Good timing.
So, Sean, tell me, what's going on with Golf Channel? What are you doing with those guys now?
I'm doing a series called Playing Lessons. We're kind of bringing back the old series, Playing Lessons with the Pros. So just basically, you know, playing nine holes with different players from the PGA Tour and LPGA Tour. So it's to give I think it's cool. One, I've always kind of enjoyed, I've been teaching for 20 years, but back in Canada, I used to do a show called The Golf Report for Rogers Sportsnet. So I've kind of always enjoyed that part of it. The nice part too, is it's here in Orlando. So I'm always looking for ways to continue to build my business, but sleep in my own bed with my family. So, you know, I think it was just kind of a natural progression. I like to talk about golf more than just obviously the golf swing. Golf is kind of all encompassing. It's been cool. I enjoy it.
I want to ask you because I know that golf with youth is a really, really big deal to you. I follow the Sean Foley Performance Academy on Instagram. I see a lot of youth golf on there. Sean, do you feel that building the game through youth is extremely important, and do you feel that it's underserved in some cases?
I mean, for me, it's I don't really think of like building the game as much as I think about. I mean, you build the game like one person at a time, right? So I think sometimes when we think about what do we need to build the game, that we're not asking the right questions. So I think it's kind of like each one teach one. And I think that, you know, what I like about the kids is, you know, they've got a lot to learn. They're passionate. They want to work hard. They still kind of have a dream. And if that's not their dream, if their dream is to come to the academy, become a better player, and then go to university and play golf or not, that's completely that's their prerogative. So it's just about being around young kids. Look, the world obviously needs more thoughtful, open-minded, caring individuals. So
yes.
For me, that's the way forward. So if I can do that, you know, the best thing about being around kids too is like you're almost forced to walk what you talk about. You know what I mean? Because as soon as you don't walk the talk, then it's interesting with kids. You know, a lot of adults think that kids don't listen to them, but I think overall sometimes these kids are just disappointed in us. And so why would you listen to someone who's not living by what they're telling you to do?
Right.
You know, you like when you do what I do for a living and you do it with a passion, you want to see that almost taken too far. So I want to be able to say to a kid, like, you need to slow down, like you're working too much.
Sean, you're teaming up with a bunch of other instructors.
Yeah, Revolution Golf, yeah.
With Revolution Golf. Is a lot of that, I mean, because it's mainly online, right? It's more online, an app, all of that, trying to hit that audience as well. Is that part of maybe reaching more specifically a younger audience?
No, because I would say that audience is, I would say that prime age would probably be right at 50. That was just, to me, when they, Justin Tupper, who owned Revolution Golf, I've been doing it for nearly 4 years now. So the Golf Channel just bought Revolution Golf, and that's what you've seen lately and now.
Yeah.
But we've had probably, like, well over a million members for a long time. And it's been, and during that time, it was McLean and Martin Chuck, myself, Andrew Rice, and then Don Saladino doing the fitness stuff. So adding Cameron McCormick, Mark Hall, these other coaches, I guess it's just a way to do golf instruction in the year 2000, and 18. So the cool part is we get to provide our own content matter. So I remember I did one time I did like a 30-minute video on the D-plane and how it affected ball flight. And I just really think that that's just, that's golf 101. Like, a lot of people could learn how to hit a ball or swing in a different way on their own if they just knew that the ball flew a certain way because the club was pointed a certain way and was going through the ball a certain way. I think if people really understood why the ball does what it does, they'd get a lot better quicker.
Right. What is the biggest difference between, say, the average guy, and I'm not talking the average guy that shoots in the 80s, the average guy who is very good at his club, he's his club champion, he's a scratch, he's maybe a plus one, a plus two. What is the biggest difference between that guy and a touring pro? Because I know there's a huge difference.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a huge difference. Yeah, 100%. Let me see. So I live in Keens Point. Our club championship was won probably at, I would say the guy was probably four under from 7,000 yards.
Right.
And if we had a tour event at that golf course, I think probably close to 30 under would win.
Whoa. So it's that.
You know what? Maybe that's a little high, but let's say 22. So that's 18 strokes.
Wow.
One of the big differences too would be that, like, you're only going to become, at some point, you're only going to become as good as your environment. So tour players play super tucked pins, firm greens, really long golf courses. I think that's got a lot to do with it too. I just think that the really good player, and we've got guys in my club who don't miss a fairway for a week in a row, but they're probably like 75 behind Dustin Johnson. So, you know, when you get to some of these courses that are 7,800 yards, you can't really be that good hitting three wood into every par four.
And the pro's proximity to the hole from 150 yards, I don't think the average person realizes how good they are from 150 yards in.
Yeah, and even at 150 yards, I think they still average like 26 feet. So that seems like, wow, that's a lot. But, you know, 26 feet is basically, you know, eight and a half paces. And from 150 yards, I mean, that's like hitting – that to me, when a guy hits a golf ball from 150 yards, like 2 feet, that's almost like getting a bullseye and darts from the other side of the room.
Right. No, you're right. It's exactly it.
It's funny how that's the sport that we chose to play, too, by
right,
the way.
Exactly.
Like it is funny. I'm a decent player, Sean. I'm like a plus 1.4 or something like that. I don't get to play a lot anymore, which is going to probably drag that down. But in the meantime, while that's going on, I'm gonna apply to play in the U.S. Open because I feel like it's kind of my right to do that. As an amateur with a handicap that is better than, I think, their limit. I think their limit's 1.4 or better. So I don't have these expectations that I'm going to be playing in Shinnecock or anything like that with the pros, but I feel like in the local qualifying, I can compete. It's at the course across the street from my house that I was a member at for 2.5 years. So my question to you is, where should my focus be on getting to that part where I'm, you know, a plus three, plus four handicap? I've been as low as a plus 2.5 when I was in college. I'm 33 now, so that was a while ago.
Right, that was a while ago when you didn't have to do anything but go to 50% of your classes in golf practice every day.
That was it. Well, I'm a custom club fitter right now, so I'm at PGA National Resort every single day. I've got all the access to anything that I could ever want other than a little, you know, time. I'm 33 with a wife and a son,
there you
so
go.
I'm busy. Yeah.
There you go. So I think that, one, my advice on the U.S. Open thing would be if you made it through the locals, once you got to the sectionals, if you're a couple over after fours, just stay out of the way of the pros who need to be in the U.S. Open. So that I would say that is just par's your partner.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, look, it could be statistical. You can look at, you know, you could use a device like Game Golf where you go out and you track for a month kind of where you miss it. And when you miss it, how much shorter it goes or how much longer it goes. And just start to understand, look, Dustin Johnson has always been the superior physical specimen, right?
Mm-hmm.
He putts well. I don't care what anyone says. You don't win that many tournaments and you can't putt.
Right.
But he drives it amazing and has for a long, long time. And then he went from, you know, 20th to 18th to 16th to 12th. And then got to number one in a fireball. And how did he do that? He used 80% of his practice time to be wedges. He went to the putting green twice a day instead of once a day. And every single shot that he hit on the range, after he hit it, he wanted to know exactly how far it went so he could start to kind of take the feeling of the shot versus the distance it went. And then he went around the golf course and started to pick apart flags like targets. And so he wasn't, like, he didn't change his backswing. He didn't change his diet. He didn't have sports psychologists. He just started to measure what he did more, and in doing so, probably learned more about what he does than maybe what he wants to do. So if he becomes really good at what he does, then he's super dangerous. So when I watch amateurs practice, I watched a couple guys the other day, and I was working with Danny Willett at the time, and these guys are good players at a really good club. And I don't even know how often they even had a target. So it was like they're working on their takeaway and their backswing, but I don't even think they were aimed at anything specific. So, you know, we have to kind of, even we're learning to shoot a rifle, like they still teach us down the crosshairs at the target. And I think that what happens with a lot of pros, because they play for a living, whether they know they're doing it or not, whether they just do it naturally or they've been taught to do it, they're way more there during their practice.
Mm-hmm.
They're learning. They're learning. Look, do you need, if you're a 1.4, do you really need to change your golf swing? Probably not. What shot do you not hit well? And then do you know exactly how far a 7-iron goes if you hit it on the bottom of the face? Because you're going to hit it on the bottom of the face like 30% of the time. But guys only know how far they hit it when they hit it well. But I think a lot of these good rounds that happen on the PGA Tour, the guys who stay consistent, their bad is just better than everyone else's, because golf is just pretty much difficult, right?
Right, it is. And it seems so easy. Is a ball sitting on the ground, it's round, you have a stick with a flat face, just hit it. But it really truly is, and I always tell people this, I believe it's one of the hardest games there are.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I don't think, like, the way you just explained it, I don't know about that. I mean, think about it. You have this metal stick with a graphite shaft. You're right. 480 yards away from a hole that the ball hardly fits in. And
right.
Someday it feels like it never fits in, right?
Right.
And it's windy, and you're playing with two guys who are losing their minds.
Right.
And yeah, no, I think it's friggin' impossible.
I think Sean's been on the golf course with us before.
That is so funny.
It's
man.
So true.
It's almost like the Robin Williams stick. Like, right. He nailed it.
It is.
Throw in a little pollen, and you're in Florida, so
right.
Fire ants. And yeah, I think it's look. It's the only thing that's kept my attention for 30 years. And I think it's just due to me, I would say, as a coach on tour, it feels like it's probably 80% disappointing, 17% satisfying, and about 3% joyful.
Right.
And I think that the 3% is worth it, even if it's only for 2 hours.
Right.
It's like, I think it's more fun to climb than summit. I think, like, I like the challenge of just when nothing's going right. There's something about that just keeps me in it, just to find a more simple way. So, but golf is so difficult. I mean, look at the ball so far from the hole when you tee off.
Right, it is. And a lot of times, even after I hit my first shot, it's still so far from the hole. For somebody who has worked with so many tour pros and has seen the things that you've seen, stood next to on the range and watched what you've watched, are there days that tour pros go out and they struggle the entire day?
Oh, of course. I mean, yeah. If you ask them, they'd say it probably feels like it's almost half the time. It depends on what you say. Well, look, if you shoot 72 on the PGA Tour, then you're going to, you know, over 5 months in a row, you're going to miss a lot of cuts.
Right.
So we think a struggle is like, my struggle is 81. I mean, I watch it all the time when I play with my buddies on men's day on Friday, and they're going down their even par through three holes, and they get a call from the office, and they can't stop hitting it out of bounds after that. So
right.
It's, you know, we have to realize, like, it's a struggle because, not just because the game itself and the arbitrary kind of randomness of it, but it's a struggle, too, because, you know, we're thinking human beings, and a lot of times the stuff we think about is useless, probably most all of the time. And so it's really difficult to play golf when there's no clarity. And, I mean, how many people can be clear? So, you know, look, golf is full of the time the guy shoots 59, right? And they interview him after and they say, so tell us about your round. And he's got, like, nothing to say. He says, yeah, I don't know, I just really felt great all day. So when people say they felt great, when people are in a good mood, they would feel good.
Right.
They would feel great. So the way you feel isn't really got anything to do with what's happening outside of you. It's just you're feeling the quality of your own thinking. So when you're in a bad mood, think about what you're thinking about. When you're in a good mood, it's kind of like someone's like, yo, you're in a good mood. Why? And you're like, I don't know. I'm just
right.
in a good mood. You're in a good mood because your head is not full of clutter. And some of it's conscious, so some of it's things we think about, tax time, getting our kids to school, violence, all the stuff that we have to deal with, and the stuff that's just, like, pumped into our head by society. But then there's the other aspect of just all the memories we have of times we weren't successful that are not forgotten. And so sometimes when we get into a situation on the golf course or off the golf course, the brain quickly goes back to protect us from this happening again, so we relive the other thing. So when you watch a guy in the seventh hole and he hits it in the water and he says that he had doubt, you can't really doubt something you haven't done yet.
Right.
There's no doubt in the present moment, but the brain can remember the time that he lost the tournament, and it was kind of the same image. Like, back in the day, we had to look across the field and see a saber-toothed tiger and be like, I'm not going that way.
Right.
So we're kind of, as human beings, we're almost pre-programmed to remember the bad so as we don't become extinct. So that's the double-edged sword to the human mind, is that, one, it's this unbelievable device. It's almost, that's our divinity, is just how special our mind is. But the problem is we're also pre-programmed to survive, which means that we need to remember the bad things that happened to us so they don't happen again. So I don't mean to confuse anyone, but I'm just trying to make sense of what I've come to believe that it is. So for me, there's nothing you can do when you're playing except just to keep playing. And I think when guys get off to a bad start, they start trying to fix something that's not necessarily broken.
And right. I'm guilty of that. I'm guilty of, I get off to a bad start and then I'm playing golf swing. I'm not playing golf anymore.
Froggy, you're playing golf swing right now. We're talking to Sean Foley and you're playing golf swing.
There's like, I'm working on something. It's something different. It's that. And it kills me.
I may play bad when I play with you too, by the way, because I'm always wrapped in. Like, you're asking me so many questions about your golf swing. I'm like, fuck, man, I'm just trying to hit on the golf course. I'm not even trying to hit a fairway. I'm just trying to advance the ball.
I mean, as a tour pro, when you're working with, say, Justin Rose, I've seen Justin. I love the methodical, maybe this is not a word, I love the methodicalness that he plays with. The way that before every swing, he's got that practice swing that he does where he drops the club down, and then goes through swinging left. I love that. Is that something, is that his only swing thought as he goes out? Do pros have a swing thought every time they go out?
Well, the thing, it's easy to get it on the range, like with a swing thought, because you get to repeat it every 8 seconds. And then you go on the course and you got, you know, sometimes you could hit an iron off of the first tee, and then the second hole is a par three, and then the third hole is a sharp par four. So you actually don't hit a driver for an hour since you've been on the range. You know, to me, trying to find that playing feel is like the trick. And the playing feel is the mechanics will improve, but there's much more intent on the shot. And it's almost trying to get that awareness of what your intent is, to then hopefully you've trained in the right way so that when you create that intent, then you just swing in a way you've trained. You know, you hear Navy SEALs say that, you know, in the thick of the battle, they just trust their training. So they're afraid, they're scared, they're nervous, but they just trust that they've trained in a superior way, so they just kind of go blank and just do what they've... So the reason a lot of people can't take it from the range to the course is because, first of all, they're not really the same at all. Like, there's no consequence on the range. And second, when do you ever hit a ball every 8 seconds? So, to me, what you're doing as far as... in your training, when you're not taking it to the course, it's more how you're training. It's not some deficiency you have in your will or your strength of mind. It's just you're not training properly. So you're going to be you know, the SEALs use live ammo. I mean, I read a stat, and this is a true stat. From 2012 to 2017, more Navy SEALs died in training than died at war. That's astonishing. But that goes to show that they're training in a way they expect to be in it. So
right.
if you train with blanks and then you hit the ground and you hear bullets whiz by you, that's probably going to lock you down. And so I think golfers, you know, how we practice needs to be really looked at, because a lot of other sports where technique isn't as taught, it's all about how to kind of get practice to be very similar to the game. Imagine the NFL if they didn't allow quarterbacks and running backs to get hit in practice. I mean, if they went the whole week without getting hit and they got popped on the first down, they wouldn't know what to do.
Right.
We have to look at that.
Speaking of somebody who practices well is Tiger. Tiger used to say he used to always peak four times a year. He always peaked for the majors. And with him coming back and playing so well, I've seen you on Golf Channel. Sean, you are extremely supportive, which I think is amazing, and the fact that you are still very supportive of Tiger.
Oh, I mean, how? First of all, he's my friend. But second of all, how can you not support a guy who every time he's doing well, the industry does well? And that's the industry you're in. That's the industry so many of your friends are in. It's a of course. So on a personal level, yeah, I mean, look, that. I mean, he, you know, they called him the chosen one. I would argue he chose to be the one. Like, to just say someone's the chosen one's kind of silly, right? Like,
right.
I hate when people are like, that guy's so gifted. It's like, so does that allow you to be mediocre because he's, like, born with something you don't have? Like, I struggle when people say that, because I've seen so many people achieve a lot of success who you wouldn't really say they were gifted. What they were they were curious, they were driven, and they could handle the pain of
right.
failure.
And they worked their ass off.
100%, 100%. By the time Luke Donald hits that, like, gorgeous bunker shot to a foot and everyone's like, wow, he's so talented. I mean, if you watched how much he had to practice to learn how to do that, you'd almost argue he's not talented. So
right, right, because he's done it so much. But with Tiger coming back, Sean, are you of the belief, and this is a couple different questions into one here, will he win again? Will he win a major? And will he get anywhere close to the number that he has so desired, the number 18?
I would say that he, of course, he's going to win a tournament. I'd say that he could win up to three this year. I would say that he'll be in contention. He'll have a chance. He'll have an opportunity to win a major for sure. He's 42. I think everything he's gone through has given him a more holistic look on how he wants to utilize his body. And I mean, that is some body, right?
Yeah.
Remember when Tiger came on tour? I think he was 145 pounds, and he had the club head speed of 125. So, you know, if he kind of gets to where he's very much within who he is, I mean, Fred Couples has been in contention three of the last six Masters, and I think at 52, Tiger probably be, or 54, Tiger probably be as good or a better player than Fred Couples. So it's, I don't see why it wouldn't. I mean, he's the greatest player of all time, and when people... I remember people texting me at Tampa there when he was right close to the lead, like, man, this is crazy, right? And I'm like, do you not remember the 79 times we saw him pick
right.
up a trophy? Like,
right.
why is this, you know, what they would say is unbelievable. And I'd be like, you know what's unbelievable is that you're not saying this is believable.
Right.
He's number one in proximity to the hole on the PGA Tour with his chipping and his pitching.
That's what I wanted to ask you about is the short game. Talk to us about, I mean, if the average guy played from where he is around the greens – they would not score what he's scoring, especially at Torrey Pines. The up and downs that he had, his short game really is something otherworldly. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I think part of it is like, you know, look, he was going through a tough time. So when the media started to talk about the yips and this and this and that, I don't know. I felt like I was watching a guy who was in pain, who didn't really want to be there. There's only one way someone as good as him can play poorly is just not to want to be there. If I went to Houston tomorrow and I got to the teaching tee and I didn't want to be there, I wouldn't be very good at what I was doing. And
right.
and I think that obviously as he feels better, he can now spend a lot more time practicing. And, you know, this is the guy where just think about all the magical shots you can see in your mind that he's hit, his creativity, at everything that he's doing. So it's so great to watch, but if I'm happy for anyone, I'm happy for him, because this is this is what he does. He's the, you know, he's the greatest of all time. I just didn't really see it finishing, not in a good way. But, you know, even the best stories, you know, life is a roller coaster, right? So we all have peaks and valleys. And,
right.
And I think what happens is it's just the acceptance of that and the humility that comes from it. And I just see, overall, I really like what I see with his game, but also with him. He still could be a defining person in many different rights, you know? I mean, they've never really covered much about his foundation, but that stuff that he does is incredible. I mean, Tiger has a voice, and he chooses to, you know, to help a lot of kids, and he's never asked for credit for any of it. He started out, Tiger is a very good guy. He's a kind guy. He's a thoughtful guy. So I think at some point, that kind of Tiger where he had to push the world out and go after what he wanted to do, I think that was completely necessary at that age and that time. But now, you know, everyone wants to see him do so well. So I think it's very important from an energy standpoint to kind of embrace that love that you're getting, and realize that that's a pretty powerful source of inspiration and energy. It was really cool to be out at Bay Hill and see so many of the people I've seen for like 10 years, but to see just everybody cheering them on.
And that's what's weird this time is that before I felt like in before you had the people who were tired of him winning all the time. And then we went through the down years and there were people who didn't like him and they didn't want to see him come back. And I feel like some people almost got joy out of his struggle. But now it seems different. The way that people reacted at the Honda here in Palm Beach and the way that people reacted in Tampa at the Valspar and, like you said, at Bay Hill, it feels like the world is pulling for Tiger again and everybody wants to see him win and wants to see what I would say arguably could be the greatest comeback in sports history, wants to see the story, wants to see the cherry on top, wants to see it end the right way, the way that he deserves it to end.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, we're all the masters of our own destiny. Obviously, life is going to have a part in that, too. But, you know, I think you don't really realize what you have until you don't have it. And so, you know, as far as the people who are bored watching him win all the time, and I'll tell you a quick story about Tiger and his effect. So when I was working at the Dove Mountain in Tucson, where they used to have the match play, and I had like O'Hare, Tiger, Rosie, and Hunter all in it. And the first day they all won their match. And so I went back to the hotel. I was having a couple beers. And I noticed this lady. This is like attractive, probably mid-50s lady sitting to the right of me. And she's kind of staring over at me. So she walks over and asks me if I'm Tiger's new coach. And I said, I am. And I asked her, are you a golfer? And she said, no, I don't play golf. And I'm like, so I can't really understand how she knows who I am. So I said, so what are you doing here? And she goes, well, my girls have went to university. I'm a dentist, and I take 8 weeks off a year. And each of those weeks, I try to take, like, less crowded golf tournaments so I can go and watch Tiger. And I'm like, but you don't play golf, ma'am. And she goes, yeah, but for me, it's like being able to watch Muhammad Ali. And that was pretty heavy. So
wow.
I met quite a few people over the time who are non-golfers. And for me, I don't watch basketball, but if LeBron is on, I watch it. If Steph Curry is on, I watch it. I don't watch soccer, but if Messi or Ronaldo's on, you know, I watch it. So it's just knowing that what you're looking at is just something that's superior to everyone else doing it. And whether they're winning or not, it's just how they go about doing it. It's inspirational. And so I think that that's the, you know, that's effect. Look, there's a lot of people across this country who we're all going through our own personal struggles. And it's no different with these guys, even though they're rich and they're famous. That doesn't, you know what, you all those things cannot help you when you're in the dumps. None of it will.
Right.
So, it, you know, I think that we all kind of, you know, when people say everyone likes a good comeback story, that's because a lot of us are trying to come back right now.
Right. Right, right, and it gives you hope. You see a guy, somebody who's been on top, he has his struggles, he falls, he climbs back up, it gives you hope that, you know what, hey, I can do the exact same thing.
Well, of course, 100%, and there's just something that's right about it. There's
right.
Just, you know, you sit there at the start of the year at the Masters, and obviously Mr. Palmer's not there anymore, but you have Mr. Palmer, Mr. Nicklaus, and Mr. Player, and they're on that first tee, and they're hitting. It's the three of them together, and it's like those guys were supposed to know each other for 45 years the way they do.
Right.
You know, it just looks, it's just so natural and perfect that it's kind of like this was everything colliding the right way. And I think that that's what we see with Tiger. I mean, can you imagine if he's in contention on late Saturday or Sunday afternoon? But just imagine the ratings.
I can't wait.
Yeah, so, you know, he knows what to do. And if I just, you know, I could never, ever doubt this guy after watching all that he's done.
No, and you stood on the range right next to it and watched it. You've seen it. You and you've seen it. I mean, he won five times with you in 2013. So I know that you're short on time. I know you got to go. There is one more question I do want to ask you. I'm one of those guys that I have the V1 app on my phone, and I study swings, and I look at this, and I look at that. I do all that stuff. Is there any one person or any one pro swing, Sean, that over time with all of your teachings, is there any one thing that you would say this is a good swing you should emulate, or is every single person different and it's different for each individual?
Yeah, no, of course. I think everyone would, you know, I think it'd be dishonest to say that people don't have preferences. Of course we do, right?
Right.
But yeah, when someone comes to me, I'm almost keeping them safe from my own preference because I'm looking at them and I'm sure that every heart surgery is not done exactly the same because of the of the circumstances. So you come to me and four other people come to me, you know, your flexibility, your strength, your height, everything is going to be different about you guys. Now there is definitely, you know, the golf, any sports movement is about being able to apply force in a direction over an optimal range of motion. That would be any sport, from discus to baseball to golf. Now, I think what happens with golf, and it's probably come because the ball's not moving, so golfers can get tricked into being more mechanical than most athletes because you can't really be a catcher and get, like, super mechanical because the ball's coming quick. So it's more of a reaction. That's the difficulty of golf. And I hear other athletes go, you know, I play with a couple guys who were in the major leagues and they're great batters, and they're like, I can't believe I can't hit this thing. It's not even moving. And it's just really funny, right? It's like, how much did you ever think when you're up at bat versus you, what you're doing now, right? So I think with golf, there's laws that have to be, you know, there's laws and principles that have to be. So Jim Furyk and Adam Scott are lawful in the same way. Now on video, they look totally different. But that's got less to do. All the good ball strikers were all good from one spot to one spot. And they basically managed the club face very well, and they did what they did very well. So we have to be careful when it comes down to methods of taking this, you know, one size fits all. It's more of a Baskin and Robbins approach to someone might need a little more strawberry or a little more chocolate or a little more vanilla. So, yeah, if someone's in front of me, all I'm trying to do is improve their understanding of what's going on and get them to hit the ball better. So that means if I have to flatten someone's backswing to do that, I'll do that. If I have to make it more upright, I'll do that. It's just that the arms and the backswing kind of have to match how their body moves. So for years, you know, people tried to keep their butt up against the wall and say the early extension's not good. And you look at, like, Greg Norman and Phil Mickelson, and they early extend a ton, and those guys are amazing.
Wait, are you talking about, like, early extension with the legs, like the right leg kind of extending before impact?
Just everything, and it's partially where the mass of the club's coming down. Then it has to also do with the strength of the player, and then a lot of all of this has to do with how you first learned how to do it. And you know, how you first learn how to do something is very remembered. Your DNA is your DNA, so you can see someone like, you know, a guy who stands up and extends, and you see, like, someone like Hunter Mahan who gets more flexed and rotates. If you try to turn them into each other, you're going to have a problem.
Right. I cannot get past that. That's my biggest bugaboo, is the early extension. But you just basically told me I can be Greg Norman, so I'm going to take that. I'm going to go to the course today, and I'm going to rock out with my early extension.
Right, exactly.
Thank you, Sean Foley.
Exactly. Sean, thank you so much for your time. Sean, I can't promise you that I'm not going to send you a swing or two of mine, and then once you get finished laughing, if you would tell me if there's any one thing I'm doing wrong that would help me get better.
Yeah, I'll either send one back laughing, or I'll send you a full thing and with an attached invoice. So,
Wow, yes. Good deal.
Hey,
you got
if,
it.
If the pod reaches X amount of people, he should get some kind of discounted rate. Right. Maybe, exactly. Right? There's value in that.
No, you too can reach out to Sean there at revolutiongolf.com. He's on Instagram, the Foley Golf Academy. Sean's doing lots of good things in the Orlando area, all over the place. Sean, really, truly appreciate your time, appreciate your insight, appreciate your knowledge. Thank you for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Have a great day.
Playing Through with Froggy, Brian Golf, and Wacker.